Welcome back to Technotopia, the podcast about a better future. I'm John Biggs. To end the show, we have Chris Dancy. He's the Mindful Cyborg. This is Technotopia. This episode of Technotopia is sponsored by CheapTranscription.io. Cheap Transcription offers 10 cent per minute transcription using our happy robots or 85 cents per minute using our human assistants. CheapTranscription.io is cheaper and faster than everyone else. CheapTranscription.io. This episode of Technotopia is brought to you by Typewriter.plus. Typewriter.plus is a full-service editorial agency that brings amazing editors from places like the New York Times and TechCrunch to work on your writing. Need a blog post, a white paper, a presentation? The Typewriter team can write or edit anything on nearly any topic. Visit them at typewriter.plus for a free quote. That's typewriter.plus, typewriter.plus. Welcome back to Technotopia, the podcast about a better future. I'm John Biggs. Today we have Chris Dancy. We're bringing him back on. He's the Mindful Cyborg and a great guy. And I want to hear optimistic stuff out of you, Chris, today. You have any for us?
Optimistic on demand. Is that a service?
Optimist. OOD, I think they call it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think we used to call that, or they now call that MLM.
MLM. No, well, actually, it's called microdosing, I believe, is the real.
I know so many people who are microdosing. No, I think it's a great time to be alive. I can't tell you how excited I am that the people who have been saying that your phones were destroying your families and your screens were ruining your health, I'd like to know what they're doing during this crisis mm-hmm. where we have nothing but screens and phones. And I'd like them to take an accountability for how many people feel bad for having to look at their phones. I think it's a great time to be optimistic. I think it's a great time to embrace technology more than ever. I think how we come out of this is a whole different conversation. I mean, how do we get people who are used to having pizzas left on their doorstep wanting to talk to people again? Mm-hmm. But again, that's for further in the conversation. But no, I think right now, I mean, I saw a great thing online the other day. Can you imagine the world without the internet right now?
Exactly.
I can't. So,
So that's a fascinating point. I mean, could something like this exist without the internet? Could there be a situation where everybody hears that they have to stay inside without the internet? And I don't think the international alert system with the beeping noise that goes off on your radio is the equivalent. It doesn't have the same inertia because you don't feel like anybody else is doing it. In this case, you feel like the whole world is listening and the whole world is stopping.
Yeah. And you can see it. And, you know, I used to share with my friends, because I've been traveling internationally for a good 15 years. I used to share with my friends how much I enjoyed going to Europe because, like, life was just quiet till about 1 p.m. and then America mm-hmm. wakes up. So I had this sense for globalism long before I was getting stuff dropped at my doorstep in 5 minutes. I think this epidemic has created something so much more profound, because we've gone from the normal internet schism of it's just hype and BS and it doesn't affect me, and then the other people, you know, are in their bunkers, to now we're starting to see people coalesce in the middle. And I can't think of another issue, unless you go all the way back to Black Lives Matter, where you had kind of an internet phenomena which divided people and then sort of brought them back together. So it'll be interesting to see how this shakes out.
How do you think it will shake out? What do you think is the future for this kind of thing? I mean, I think
you want me to be optimistic.
Yeah, go for it. Yeah.
Well, you want me to be optimistic. And I think you have to remember everything I say is optimistic, because I'm working from the point of view that we all only have one thing we have to do, and that's die. The mm-hmm. rest of the stuff we do every day is a choice. So I don't mean that to be pessimistic, but I meant, like, if you're alive, you know, like one of my favorite meditation teachers, Jon Kabat-Zinn, says, if you're breathing, there's more right with you than wrong. So
okay.
I personally think, you know, two fronts, you know, there's the actual how this all moves around, and then there's the psychological impact of all this. I think from an infrastructure side point, kids aren't going back to school. I mean, and I don't think it'll be this year. And I mean this year, I mean calendar. I think we'll also miss the fall. The other thing is, you know, we're also at a point now where globally everyone's doing some type of aid package. So at some point, we just have to say, is there some system we maybe need to get rid of since everybody needs help? I mean, because it's obvious, right? Everything from healthcare mm-hmm. to UBI is on the table now. We're not calling it that, but that's where we are. So I think there are a lot of systematic changes that will shake out by fall. I think psychologically, though, we have a much different road to take because, again, I think as people start to feel the relief of the boot off their neck about their rent, the mm-hmm. boot off their neck about their healthcare, they're going to start to have the time to say, what have I been doing? Going to this mm-hmm. job, married to this person, living this lifestyle. Those type of ramifications are so much more profound, I think, right now than the illness.
Hmm. So you think this is a moment of renaissance? You think this is a change? I mean, somebody noted that that 9/11 was sort of a kickstart as well. It got a lot of people into the military. It got a lot of people out of society. It made a lot of people rethink their jobs. You think this is the same sort of thing?
Gosh, you know, I was at the FAA putting in a computer system on 9/11. And I can mm-hmm. tell you right now, watching, you know, hundreds of people leap up from their desks and pull down books that decoded alert sounds because they had never heard this alert sound. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the alert sound was ground the fleet. And I remember, and then, you know, of course, then they evacuated us out of D.C. and I ended up staying with someone out in Arlington. In my mind, 9/11, I think, was a way of social cohesion. I think I felt that kind of nation. I don't feel that nation. I almost feel like a global cohesion coming online. So to your point, I do believe this is a renaissance of sorts. I'm calling it the great leveling, or I've sometimes referred to it as the actual singularity, not some type of technological singularity. But I think what's happening, and you can make a really good case for this with enough information or data offline, is people are waking up. You know, mm-hmm. people are waking up to their lives. They're waking up to the people they love. They're waking up to their potential and purpose. And some people aren't happy with, you know, rubbing this sleep out of their eyes. You know, I do believe the world is so radically different from how we treat each other in 12 months. We will, you know, there'll be two groups of people who remember what it was like mm-hmm. before this event, and the people who basically then adapt that way of living. This is so much bigger than a war.
Yeah, interesting. That's a great point. I mean, it feels like I think even just by virtue of working from home for any length of time, you're going to have a whole different group of people who have been schlepping into an office every day, thinking that's the way things work. It was actually kind of wild today. The place where I work, they said, "Oh, this is very unusual that we're all offline or we're all online doing this big Zoom call." It's like, dude, this is pretty much par for the course anywhere else outside of this strange organization that has been built up over some one person's personality because they were so worried about micromanaging that they didn't want to let anybody out of their sight.
You know, think about just the impact of what you said just on video. You know, last night I saw a group of people here in Houston who were Zooming to complete strangers their dinner. And complete mm-hmm. strangers are coming on. So let's leave that to the side for a moment. Let's just go to work. You know, all these companies who now are using all these type of video conferencing services who didn't used to. I mean, I would venture to say that there are millions of people who've now showed their home who've never showed their home before. Mm-hmm. So just the transparency involved with opening up a video chat to your apartment or your house. Mm-hmm. It's mind-boggling, the amount of vulnerability people are going to start to feel. And I think, you know, you take that on one side of it, then you take the social part of it, you know, neighbors meeting neighbors. I'm building a system now where we're rolling it out and two different companies have reached out to me, the two companies have built the system on, and said, hey, we want to deploy this within our communities. You know, these are people who don't normally see each other outside of text, you know, a text-based mm-hmm. update or something. So I do believe this is a great leveling. You know, if you're not worried about your income, you probably have too much money right now. If you're not worried about your health, you've probably have too much money right now. I believe that the amount of transparency and just awakening that's happening within people because again, I'm 5 months from ruin, right? Mm-hmm. I have a nest egg, but it's all going to be gone. But I don't know anybody who doesn't feel that. So, you know, it's time just to say, you know, what could we do better? Because we get to reboot the computer. It's being turned off right now.
Yeah, that's actually a great analogy. It does feel like the computer is being rebooted, and all the sort of like the upgrades that everybody has been ignoring for so long are finally being implemented, for better or worse.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So I am cautiously optimistic, only because we need some people. You know, I was sharing with you earlier before we started recording. You know, at 52, in the past few days, I was literally in Europe before they shut it down, just trying to get home. I was then in Disney World when people were walking around acting like nothing was going on, and had to drive home because we didn't get flights. You know, anytime I get a chest pain or my back is sore or I have just a normal cough or clearing my throat, you know, the health paranoia, right? The health anxiety is huge. Mm-hmm. So, and also if you see someone near you in public who's coughing, you know, automatically and totally naturally, people get afraid. These types of things, I think, can either be met with strength or met with fear. And I'm seeing people rising to the occasion with strength. I just wish we would stop focusing on how we are preparing as individuals and individual families and really start to focus on our communities. Because again, at 52 and gay, I lived through this. You know, I was 20. Mm-hmm. 1988, when I was burying friends. I was 24 in 93 when I buried my lover who died next to me, right? Mm-hmm. I can tell you right now, the government's not coming to save you. All the checks in the world aren't going to make this go away. All the debt relief and mortgage is not going to make these feelings go away. You're seeing an unbundling of your comfort. And I think unless you get hyper-local, the people who live next to you and near you, you're not going to be very optimistic. You've got to reach out to your neighbors and just say, hey, can I leave something in front of your door? We made some cookies. Can I leave some cleaning supplies? That simple act is going to restore a lot more faith than doling out checks globally.
Yeah, that's a striking statement, but it's also absolutely true. I mean, we live in a self-perpetuating retirement community, quote unquote, out here in Bay Ridge, and the neighbors get older and older, and then but nobody's there to help them. But I guess, I mean, that's kind of what small town America, that's kind of what small town Europe was supposed to be. I wonder if it still is where it is.
I spend a lot of time in small Europe. I mean, when I go, just because I don't want the flight chain, right? And plus, you know, my body doesn't handle intercontinental travel. I'm over there all the time speaking and consulting. I was just over there working with Bayer Pharmaceuticals, right? Mm-hmm. And when I go, I stay for months at a time. I don't stay in the cities. I go out. First of all, the Airbnb is cheaper. Second off, I need to walk anyway. Small towns are still a lot like that. The only thing that's really changed in small town Europe that I've noticed is everybody now speaks English, which is kind of weird.
Interesting.
Yeah, everybody speaks English.
So we have a couple more minutes, and we can stretch this out a little bit too. I wanted to see what your thoughts were in terms of that. So I'm imagining a future where something like a Morgantown, West Virginia, becomes a home for deer and raccoons and no humans. Mm. Is that still the case after this thing? Does it make more sense to disappear into the Catskills or to disappear into rural Texas? Is that something people are going to want to try to do?
I mean, I'd be lying if I said I haven't thought about that. You know, my father-in-law has a cabin about 3 hours outside of San Antonio. I've been there. I mean, there's no road to it. You literally have to four-wheel out to it. Yeah, I mean, I've thought about that. But like, listen, again, this is not hard math, right? Mm-hmm. If you're banking your future on evacuating humanity, again, you're not going to be happy. I know the movies make safe rooms seem great and they make, you know, bunkers seem attractive, but that's not the reality. When people have been in this quarantine for 2 weeks, we'll see. Right now, we're still seeing people singing songs from their balconies and playing disco music. That's going to go away. And we're going to be forced to, how do I actually communicate with them? I wouldn't doubt it if people don't start to learn to knock on pipes. You know, the need to talk to each other is going to supersede the need to be, you know, this renegade. We're already there. You know, I think half the malaise in the country is just because people miss voices.
Interesting.
I mean, podcasts are nothing more than surrogates for friends.
Yeah, it's you listen to your favorite guys talk about your favorite topics.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, but again, you know, I find it an attractive idea. You know, but the other thing that's kind of making me crazy about this whole situation is there's so many articles now about people who've been away for a few weeks and they come back. I call it Rip Van Winkle porn, right? Mm-hmm. You know, this idea that somehow we can fetishize anybody who has the bandwidth and or resources to not be aware.
Mm-hmm. Or to not be online, right?
Right. I mean, it's just, it's so toxic. It's so tough to make this idea that you could somehow escape being painfully anxious about the developments. And again, instead of just saying, I'm painfully anxious about the developments. Anybody else feeling that? Oh, you want to talk? I mean, I put my phone number out on Twitter the other day. And it said, you know, a bunch of people, like, you know, favored it and liked it and retweeted it. A couple of people DM me. But one person called. I said, I don't know you, but I've been following you for a while. And I really appreciate everything you do. And I'm like, call me anytime. It's like I'm not doing anything else. Right, just kind of with the cats and my husband, and like, this is okay, right?
Yeah, you're just you're there to communicate, and that's basically what you're doing on Twitter anyway. Let's talk a little bit about what we were chatting about earlier, the idea of building something important online. How do you build things of import? How do you build things that are satisfying to yourself and I guess to others, right? What do you think that looks like?
So, yeah, I mean, I was quite surprised, you know, Airtable's probably got a couple $1 billion valuation, and so does Nextdoor, the neighborhood grouping app. And they both reached out to me immediately when they saw what I had built. I think when we think about building things of value, I think we almost need to think about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? Podcasts are pretty far up that triangle, right? Into self-actualization and love and all that. I mean, it's pretty far. But the things at the bottom of that Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, things like safety and infrastructure, you know, and shelter, those are really important things. And most people say, but those aren't digital things. And I would argue they're very much digital things nowadays, right? While you can't build a house online, you can offer one. We call it Airbnb. Right. Mm-hmm. First thing Airbnb does during disasters is they have this whole situation where they roll out disaster relief homes where they literally pay the host and then people who need the help come stay. Right. So the first thing when I'm thinking about, and you know, the system that I designed here was like, how do I create something where I unite people with skills, people with supplies, and people with equipment with people who need it, who are less than two blocks away from me? Because I can walk out two blocks and stay 6 feet away from people, right? And those are the people that I'd want to help anyway. So I think we're going to probably see an amazing amount of hyperlocal solutions. For people who are not aware of hyperlocal solutions and hyperlocal communities, you know, there's a great movie online called How to Survive a Plague. It was basically about how the LGBT community in the 80s and the early 90s literally drew blood from each other, tested rogue drugs on each other, pulled their money to hire doctors and buy drugs from. I mean, that's for sure happening. We don't know it yet. I mean, today I shared that I don't care about the testing anymore. Now I want pre-exposure prophylactics, right? Which is basically, if we have it for AIDS, we call it PrEP, but we could have it for COVID. There's a few studies now that say this really cheap drug, $6 for a month's supply, will protect you. Right. So I think, you know, again, building solutions that help locally for real physical things. So skills, like in my neighborhood, the system we built, you can be a caregiver, you can be a healthcare supplier, you can be someone who's a good handyman, you can be someone who can drive someone. So we have a list of skills that are my neighbors. I've got about 70 people who have signed up now to volunteer. Then you've got a list of supplies and equipment. Obviously, someone like me, I have pulse oximeters, right? My neighbor has an oxygen machine with you know, again, oxygen is an approved WHO therapeutic for someone who is at the early stages of pneumonia before you need a ventilator. Empowering that, right? Just today in my group, someone said, you know, hey, I'm out of cleaning supplies and there's none at the store. Literally, someone came online. I assigned them to one of our volunteers. That person mixed up, you know, homemade cleaning supplies and left it on the doorstep, right? You know, mm-hmm. Now, what is that, right? That is nothing more than me saying, here's a web form anyone goes to and say, I need help. Here's a second web form anyone goes to and says, I can help. Yep. What can you do? And again, and the back end's really simple. I've only got 800 people in my neighborhood. When someone asks, I just assigned it to someone who signed up. Done. But it's keeping us in touch with each other. It's also helping the spread of misinformation. It's introducing neighbors to neighbors. It's taking people who have prepared, right? The dirty prepper word. And those mm-hmm. people who haven't, and marrying them together. I think these types of very simple systems are going to be profoundly important in the next 3 months. And I'm shocked we're still worried about getting a testing solution where you can find a local drive-through test. And we're not saying, where do we find local help when the hospital is overwhelmed?
Mm-hmm.
I'm shocked that system isn't being built. So that's why I'm focusing on the thing I'm focusing on, because I've lived through AIDS. I know what we're going to need. And we're going to need a lot of each other very close. And we're going to need a lot of people who maybe work in a hospital. I've got an EMT in my neighborhood who volunteered the other day. You know, when he found out I had a pulse oximeter and blood pressure cuff and glucose meters and everything else I have, like, for my stuff, mm-hmm. you know, he was like, this is amazing. I'm like, yeah, I bet there's more in our neighborhood. So I hope that makes sense. But to me, it's very clear what we need. And I'm kind of shocked we're still worried about people getting tests and worrying about checks and not saying, okay, let's pretend we've got our checks and we've got our test and there's no escaping this. Because even mm-hmm. if we quarantine for 3 months, it comes back in the fall, right?
Yeah.
What we're waiting for is a vaccine or pre-exposure prophylactics to keep us from getting sick. Those are the two things we're waiting for. So let's stop pussyfooting, or like my mom would say, pussyfooting around and say that. And so what do we do until we have those two things? Those are the systems we need to be building.
And those are the systems that are most important.
You would think, I mean, for me, you would think, I mean, other than infrastructure, God forbid water or electricity starts to go out, right? God forbid, right? Mm-hmm. All these things go right out the window. But let's suppose for a second, infrastructure stays on. I'm telling you right now, you know, check out my website, check out this article, mm-hmm. because you're going to want something like this in your space. Because if you or your spouse get sick 3 weeks from now and our health system is overwhelmed, and they're making choices about, we put you on a ventilator or we send you home. You don't want to be mm-hmm. sent home to nothing. You want to be sent home to a neighborhood who has prepared, people who have spare rooms, people who have spare garages, people who have spare beds, people who have oxygen, people who have blood sugar supplies. You want to be sent home to that. That needs to be built.
What's the website?
Just my website, chrisdancy.com. It's under the consulting section. I'll send you a cool link to it. And again, it's a real simple thing I created. There's a template. Anyone can install it for their local neighborhood and they're up and running. Like, you don't have to do anything. You just, mm-hmm. it creates up two links for you. I need help. I can help. And then those two people meet in the middle. But John, I'm so, so passionate that we are way beyond where people think we are. And we're to the point where we need to be considering our own local MASH hospitals, our own local mm-hmm. support systems, beds, rooms, medical supplies, cleaners, food, simple things. You know, the other day someone on our group said, you know, I'm out of meat, right? So what I do, I took a you know, frozen pack of a couple pounds of chicken out, put it in a cooler and left it on the doorstep, you know, mm-hmm. close the ticket. Right? I'm a help desk manager from the 90s, right? it looks like a plea for food, but I call that a ticket. Right? So, you know, this is, to me, it's pretty funny, you know, and I don't mean to make light of it, but
No.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Chris, I'm actually for the first time in a couple weeks, I guess I'm a little bit more peppy and happy. So I think this is a good choice for me, and I hope it's a good choice for everybody who's listening.
Well, thank you, John. I really admire your work, and you know, I appreciate the first time you had me on to talk about my book, and gosh, you're such a positive force and a great family man. And, you know, I don't know. I really admire you, even though I've never met you. And if there's, you know, again, anything I can do for you or anything for your listeners, again, I've said this on every podcast, every interview I do. Mm-hmm. I give good Google. My phone number's online. My phone number's online. My email. If you need help, if you are anxious right now, if you want to mobilize your neighborhood right now, you call me. I will have you up in a half an hour.
Wonderful.
Be the leader. Be the leader your neighborhood needs.
Excellent. I'm setting up my Airtable right now, so we're gonna do this here.
Okay, the template's on my website, so you'll install it in 2 seconds.
Chris Dancy, thank you for joining me on this. This has been great.
Thank you so much, John.
All right. This has been Technotopia. I'm John Biggs. We will see you next week. Technotopia is brought to you by Happy Fun Corp. Happy Fun Corp is a design-driven technology company in Brooklyn, New York that specializes in building mobile and web applications for startups and Fortune 500 companies. Whether it's a new mobile or web application that will help people experience the internet in a fun new way, or software that will interface with a new piece of top-secret hardware, Happy Fun Corp is always up to the challenge. Big or small, Happy Fun Corp loves building software and loves working with great people. Come build with them. HappyFunCorp.com.